In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swung, hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
What can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddy.
Welcome to Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. Brian Shackman, partner John Senecal, episode 164. What's happening?
Huh, not much, man. It's getting down to crunch time for us parents. We'll talk about that later.
We're both sending children off to college for the first time, his son and my daughter. And I don't know if that is why I've been in such a bad mood all week. I don't really know, but it could be. Well, I'll give you the rundown. We'll talk about the teams as they are right now. We'll talk about the World Baseball Classic, and the wrinkle here is, you know, what the possible impact, or what it says about the possibility of professional baseball players going to the Olympics in 2028, which, you know, a lot of people would like to see. We'll talk with Joey Votto, who just retired, and then we'll talk about our feelings as we wish our oldest children off to school. You know, when it comes to the Yankees, talk to me. I usually give my hot take, and then, you know, I'd rather start with yours.
Okay, so we talked about the month of August, right, for both teams, yep. That it's going to be a very defining time. The one was the Yankees had a pretty much cake schedule, and the Red Sox had a much harder schedule.
Correct.
And as we sit right now, they're pretty much the same. The Red Sox are 10-9, and the Yankees are 9-8 overall in the month, which, if you look at it from the Red Sox perspective, I think it's very good considering who they played. If you look at it from the Yankees perspective, it's not so good considering who they played, considering that as of Thursday, today, is they're playing the Indians, which was their hardest competition of the month. And if you look at all the other teams, it's pretty much ho-hum under 500, and the Yankees aren't doing what they need to do in the month.
So the caveat I have there, I mean, the Red Sox on this most recent trip, and it doesn't get easier with, you know, the Arizona Diamondbacks coming to town, who are an excellent team. The Red Sox blew several games.
Yeah, so did the Yankees.
Right, but I mean, you know, like, they went 4-3 in this most recent trip. They easily could have been 6-1. And so my thing with, listen, we all know the Red Sox bullpen is not very good, and they're still within, they could get the wild card. The problem is that every time I give up on them. Like, I was at that Texas game they lost in 10 innings, and I was like, they're done. I'm done. And then they go, and then they take 2 or 3 from Baltimore, and then they take 2 or 3 in Houston. I'm like, who the hell are these guys? And so, like, I don't know how to feel. I actually don't know how to feel, because they talk about the illusion of contending. Like, they're not really a contending team, but they still are very much in the hunt to make the playoffs. And who, you don't know, have any idea what's going to freaking happen if they made the playoffs?
No, of course you don't. You have no idea what's going to happen if they make the playoffs, because, like, the Diamondbacks proved that last year.
Right.
The thing that worries me about the Yankees and the Red Sox is their unpredictability, like you talked about. The Yankees' bullpen is Jekyll and Hyde. We all know the Yankees' hitting is basically two players, which you can work around in the playoffs. And then, like you said, the Red Sox, they dangle it in front of you, like you said. You know, they dangle the good play in front of you, and then they kind of go ho hum. But the fact that they took 2 or 3 from the Astros is good. You can't take much stock in what's going on with the Orioles right now, because they're like the one team in baseball that I feel like doesn't know
it's
what
worse.
They're doing more than the Yankees do.
I know, like, all honestly, like, it's kind of crazy how the AL East, you know, for years we said, oh, it's the best division in baseball. And then we've talked about on the show how maybe they're not, but it's almost like, who wants to win it?
Yeah. I mean, when you look at their records, I mean, they are the best division in baseball, because those are the teams that are fighting for the best records in baseball overall. The Yankees, the Orioles, the Indians, the Dodgers. And that, the Dodgers are the only, you know, obviously the National League. But, you know, again, it's weird when you look at a team like the Yankees, who, as we speak now, are in first place by, you know, mere inches. And the fans are so critical of them, and they have the best record in baseball, or right at the point. But the fans are critical because they're not playing to their potential. They just aren't. They're too much of a Jekyll and Hyde. They're too much dependent on two players, Soto and Judge. I mean, Soto and Judge basically account for a third of the runs that the Yankees have scored this year. I mean, let's be honest. You're gonna if and when you get to the playoffs. Let's say the Yankees are making the playoffs, which I'm pretty much sure they are. If I'm a team early in a game and I'm going to sacrifice one run and work around Aaron Judge and Juan Soto, I'm going to do it.
Why wouldn't you?
I'm going to do it because right. The Yankees have not proven that they can lock you down guaranteed after the fifth or sixth inning. And that's assuming that the starters are going to give you the length you need, right? The Yankees going forward, obviously they need to fix some hitting. I don't necessarily know if that's going to happen because the players that they got playing right now haven't shown that ability. Now you have Rizzo coming back. You have Jazz eventually coming back. Hopefully.
Wait, he's not going to is he coming back
yeah,
this year?
Yeah, he should be back. Jazz I think avoided some serious injury, you know, in the rest of the season. He should be back, I would think, not far after Labor Day, and Rizzo is going on a rehab assignment Saturday.
Rizzo now they come to the point cuz Rizzo's not that he's the same hitter cuz he's not the same as Soto and Judge, but he's closer to them. Like Chisholm is a guy I actually think is the key.
Yeah.
The key. I think Holmes and Chisholm are the key to them.
Well, I would say Holmes, Chisholm, and Stanton are the keys to the Yankees.
Because, I don't even pay attention to
because Stanton. without the protection for Aaron Judge and Juan Soto, I'm going to say both of them, Aaron Judge and Juan Soto, which is going to fall in the back of Stanton and or Rizzo, I would imagine, going right. down the stretch. I'll stick with Stanton because he's the definite in the lineup right now.
I haven't heard his name called at all.
Well, because he hasn't been doing anything. And the fact of the matter is you got a 1 month, you got to go on a heater, right? You have to perform the month of October if you make the playoffs. That is just a given. You can't slack off, right? Yeah. Because you know Judge and Soto are going to perform. But again, if that four hitter is not performing, they will pitch around them. They're going to pull a Buck Showalter and walk the dude if it means a run. They will.
Right.
And if I'm a manager, an opposing manager, I'm going to do that. I'm not going to let Juan Soto and Aaron Judge beat me. I'm going to say, Stanton, let's see you beat me. And it's just he doesn't – I just don't have the confidence in him doing it. I hope I'm wrong. But the Yankees, as they are right now – going forward, if the players keep playing the way they are in for a world of hurt come the playoff time, because it's a whole new ballgame. We know that. It's a whole new ballgame. I mean, Wednesday night, Aaron Judge is seeing pitches late in the game where they're up and he's hitting a home run. He's not going to see that in the playoffs.
Right.
Not a chance. He's not even going to see it in the first inning in the playoffs. They'll just work around him. I just feel like the Yankees need to wake up. Obviously, the trade deadline's gone. There's guys that went on the waiver wire that they could have picked up.
No, the only help is guys getting hot or coming back.
They need
injury.
Jazz Chisholm back to get rid of DJ LeMahieu. They need Anthony Rizzo to come back to get rid of LeMahieu and Ben Rice. Those are just definites. If those two guys don't come back and start to perform, the Yankees are in a world of hurt.
He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. We'll wait and we'll see on that. I want to move on to the World Baseball Classic. You know, I didn't pay much attention when they came out with the pools and the format and all this stuff. Why don't you just quickly summarize the format and the teams?
Okay, so basically what's going to happen is the World Baseball Classic is going to be played in 2026, and it was just announced the four different pools that the teams are going to be in, and the four different places are San Juan, Houston, Tokyo, and Miami. So you have four different pools, and the main players in the pools are Pool A would be Puerto Rico and Cuba, which also includes Canada and Panama. Pool B is going to be in Houston, Texas, and that's the U.S., Mexico, Italy, and Great Britain. Pool C will be in Tokyo, and that's Japan, Australia, Korea, and the Czech Republic. And then the final pool will be in Miami, and that is Venezuela, Dominican Republic, the Netherlands, and Israel. Now, each one of those four pools will have a qualifying team put into it. Now, that could be a team maybe like Spain or South Africa or, you know, just these countries that are still developing their baseball.
Right.
They're throwaway teams, but it's to grow the game, right? That's
sure.
what it's for. But if you look around the pools, I feel like each pool is going to have two teams that are going to advance to the quarterfinals, which will be, I believe, is quarterfinals are in Houston. And if you look at Pool A, you got Puerto Rico and Cuba, you would think would be the two teams. Pool B would be the U.S. and Mexico. Pool C would probably be Japan and Korea. And Pool D.
Possibly Australia. But yeah.
Possibly Australia. But Pool D would probably be Venezuela and DR.
Yeah.
But I look at the pool that U.S. is in and the pool that Japan is in, and I feel like that pool is definitely set up for two teams to easily go through. Where if you look at, like, you know, I mean, Canada you know, say what you want about Canada.
Poole is the toughest.
Poole is probably the toughest because Panama is not going to roll over. They got good players. And Canada, the game in Canada is growing a lot. And we'll talk about Joey Votto later, a Canadian. But at the same time, you know, U.S. and Mexico, you never know what you're going to get out of them. Great Britain is going to be a throwaway. Italy is a throwaway. So I feel like those two teams are going to easily advance. Japan and Korea, I think, are the two easy ones out of there. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens, but I think...
But this isn't the important thing.
The important thing is
that they do it in less than 2 weeks,
yep.
And you think it could be a template for the Olympics.
The Olympics. You know, we had talked about the Olympics putting baseball in the Winter Olympics to offset the in-season
They won't do it, but it's a great idea.
I think it's a great idea because that automatically takes the season out of it.
Are you the only one that's ever brought that up?
I don't know. I mean,
I've never seen it
I'd have to Reddit
else.
That one, maybe. Yeah. But that being said, right, that's the big... On paper, that's the big issue, not playing during the season. Let's get past the unions and the contracts and all that BS. The big issue is it going to coincide with the in-season play? You would have to shut the season down, or you're going to lose your superstars on the teams. MLB will never let that happen. It's just not going to work. You can't shut MLB down for 11 days. And then if you shut it down during the All-Star break, you're going to go to the All-Star break. So what are you going to tell Aaron Judge you can't go to the All-Star game? I mean, yeah, he might be, all right, I've been to about All-Star
game. No, I think what they would do is they would cancel the All-Star game.
They would cancel the All-Star game, but still, you're talking about an 11-day window, at the minimum a 10-day window. That's 2 weeks, basically.
So the All-Star window is like a 4-day window?
Yeah, it's basically a Monday through, then they come back on the weekend. So it's Monday through Friday.
You got to tack on a week to that to do it. There's two reasons why I don't think it's going to happen. Is I think that the liability is too risky. Mm-hmm. There's too much money invested in these players. And I don't think they'll be able to collectively bargain. The cost benefit part of it is like, I don't think that you could compensate the owners and the players enough to make it worthwhile. So if they said to the USOC or the IOC, that's fine, we'll give you 2 weeks. We need $250 million.
Yeah.
Because we need to offset the players, we need insurance, and we got to figure out the schedule. And do you think the IOC is going to give them $250? I'm throwing an arbitrary number out. Because the truth is, like, if Aaron Judge pulls a hammy in the Olympics, it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, and I don't think you can throw money at that problem because how do you put a value on
it? You can throw money at anything.
You can throw money at anything, but if I'm the Yankees and I'm looking at that and they're saying like, okay, say that in 2026 Juan Soto and Aaron Judge are on the Yankees and you're going to lose Juan Soto and Judge. How much money is that worth? If they go and they play, okay, so you give the Yankees $50 million or $25 million to lose those two players. What happens when one of them gets hurt, like Edwin Diaz did for the Mets?
Insure the full value. But I think what you do is you got to insure the full value of the contracts of everyone who participates.
The full overall value.
Yes.
Exactly.
And that's a lot of money.
That's insane amount of money, and that's never going to happen, like you said. And, you know, giving the Yankees or any team an amount of money to take a player off the field and then maybe off the field for a season, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, depending on what they got hurt. It just, amount of money.
So even though they could do it in 11 or 12 days, you still don't think there's a chance that it'll happen?
No, I don't. I don't. And I still think the best opportunity for MLB players to be in the Olympics is to move it out of season and then work on the contract logistics. I feel like the only right step to take is to put it in the Winter Olympics. I just do because that takes away the scheduling.
Why don't you write like an op-ed or something or like some sort of, why don't you put it in Baseball America? Like, why don't you write an article on it?
I'll think about that.
And I'll edit it for you.
I mean, I think it's a great idea. I mean,
it would be insane because it would bring a ton of attention to the Winter Games. And it would work out schedule-wise. Now, you still have to collectively bargain an earlier, like the spring training disruption's going to be interesting, although it's over before spring training, but it's really close to the end of the season. So we're talking February, right?
Yeah, we're talking February, but I also feel like, you know, the way these players are conditioned now, they're ready to go all season long. Most of these players go and play winter ball year-round. I mean,
the young ones do,
and some of the guys that are the Latin players that are going back home do it, that even have been in the league for years.
Just to stay sharp.
But it's not like the old days where you roll in with a heater in your mouth in spring training, you stop smoking for 2 weeks to run a few laps.
Or Babe Ruth had to lose 30 to 40 pounds every spring training.
It's just not, that's just not the way it works anymore.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I encourage you to bring this idea to a wider audience. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is episode 164 of Fan Base. a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. Let's get to Joey Votto. So he officially retired, and he's got a career that spans back to 2007.
17 seasons.
And so I guess the question is, you know, I really hadn't followed him as closely. I mean, I've looked now at his entire, you know, his baseball card, but I remember him as just one of the guys that really got it when it came to fan interaction, found a way to succeed but also have fun. Because a lot of these guys are so focused on themselves that they don't give a crap about the fans, and they just want they want to hit and make money. Really, I mean, that's really what they're. And I don't blame them for that. But Votto played with a joy and an intensity. You know, he had both, because don't mess with him, right? And also, he was super fun with the fans. And he'll be missed. And I guess the question is he a Hall of Famer? And I'm curious as to what you think.
So I say yes, but I think it's going to be a lot closer than you think, because you and I talked before the show about the benchmarks, right? And the benchmarks as a hitter are the average, the on-base percentage, or RBIs, and home runs, or, you know, slugging percentage. So if you talk average on-base percentage, slugging percentage, it would be 300, 400, 500. And unfortunately, his career average in the last couple of years dipped below 300. He's a 294 career hitter. But he qualifies in those other categories. And only 18 players in Major League history have those numbers. And they're all in the Hall of Fame except one player. And can you guess who that player is?
Who has that numbers and is not in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
Well, it's got to be like a Bonds.
Yeah. It's not Bonds. It's Manny Ramirez.
It's who?
Manny Ramirez.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because Bonds didn't have the average.
Oh, and Manny probably will never get in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, Manny will never get in the Hall of Fame, and probably Bonds won't ever get in the Hall of Fame either, which is a whole other conversation.
We're not doing that today.
It's a whole other conversation, but let's look at Joey Votto, right? Six-time All-Star, six-time top 10 MVP, one MVP in 2010.
Never won a World Series.
Never won a World Series. Some would argue he should have won the MVP in 2017, but Giancarlo's 59 home runs, I think it was, something like that, or 58 home runs.
Whole career with one team.
Whole career with one team.
Which is amazing to me.
Led the league seven times in on-base percentage, five times in walks. I mean, the only other person, only other people that led the league in on-base percentage seven times are Ted Williams, Barry Bonds, Babe Ruth, and Roger Hornsby.
Wow.
So when you start mentioning names like that, and then you start looking at the names in the that are on the Hall of Fame, why wouldn't he be there, right? So I think it really comes down to the fact is, are they going to look at that stuff? Or are they going to look at the sexy stuff? Are they going to look at, well, he didn't have...
The World Series is a problem.
The World Series title is a problem,
and
exactly.
Because your number's got to be sort of overwhelming. What I would say...
is RBIs are low.
I feel like the bar for the because guys aren't playing as longer, like the 3,000 hit line is no longer as big a deal or what have you, so... I feel like the bar is lower than it was 20, 30, 40 years ago, and I think popularity matters, and he was clean and well-liked. So do I think, like, if a guy like this gets in on a first ballot, I'd say that the whole process has become a joke. He doesn't deserve, like, first ballot consideration, but he definitely deserves, because I think he's a great ambassador to the game.
Yes.
And so I'm not like on a Joey Votto for the HOF bandwagon, but I mean, when I look at this, you brought it to my attention, and I look at his average the last 4 or 5 years. If you take out his, you know, his waning years, he was way over 300 for most of his career. I think he hits 300 or better like at least seven times. So I don't know. I feel like he is a bit borderline, but I think he's get in on his third, fourth, or fifth ballot type.
He also from 2007 to 2023, he had a 920 OPS, and that's third only behind Trout and David Ortiz. And Ortiz is a Hall of Famer, and we all know that probably Mike Trout should make the Hall of Fame.
Trout's going to be a great conversation because he's going to be like a Sandy Koufax-y kind of guy.
Short-term, big returns.
Like, it's kind of like, gosh. So I think the book on Votto is, I love the fact that he was one team, and I think he'll get in eventually, but not first time through.
But it's an interesting conversation because I feel like he's one of those guys that, you know, these baseball nerds that vote for this stuff aren't going to miss this stuff. They will see it, and there's no bad apples on him other than the fact that he got thrown out of a game in his last at bat. But I mean, it is what it is, right? But hats off to Joey Votto. He's always, you know, he started out, he had issues with his mental health coming into the league when he first started. He overcame that and put together a hell of a career. And I mean, 5 years from now, I'll be rooting for him for the Hall of Fame for sure.
2,000 games. 2,000 games.
Yeah, and 2,135 hits. So, I mean, that dude was cranking out a hit a game.
Yeah, that's really impressive. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. This week, I haven't done it yet. I'm going to bring my daughter. You know, I just been corresponding with my wife. You know, I've been in a horrible mood, and my wife is in a horrible mood. Our house is a disaster. Everyone's sniping at each other. It feels like our family honestly is falling apart. And I don't know if it's our family's falling apart or if it has something to do with my daughter going away. I don't want to put a lot of like my personal laundry through this show. I don't feel the personal problem for me sending my firstborn to college is part of it is our family dynamic has changed forever. And I hate getting old. Those are the two things when it comes to my selfishness. And ultimately, those things don't matter as much because she's the one going through it. But I'm not an overprotective dad, but I'm really nervous for my daughter. So like the consumption I'm consumed by, you know, she is who she is, and she's got to create the experience for herself. I mean, she's not had a lot of life experience. You know, she had a lot of challenges in the like many of our kids with the pandemic. So I'm just nervous for her. I'm nervous for her happiness. I'm nervous for her health. I'm just nervous for her. I'm not nervous about me. I'm nervous for her.
But do you feel like she is exhibiting signs that she is nervous?
I don't, you know, I think the nerves are natural and understandable, but I feel like she's got, I don't want to give too much of her because it's not fair to her in the setting to do that without her permission because she would rake me over the coals for not getting her permission. But what I would say is that I think she's not as ready as she thinks she is for managing her life. And it's not like she's, you know, got to pay the bills and mow the lawn, but it is a major jump in terms of management. And I don't know that she understands all that that entails. And so, yeah.
Well, I think that's a good point, Brian, because I think in general, society has changed, right? I mean, when we were growing up, I was in the kitchen all the time. I was cooking with my grandparents and I was cleaning with my grandmother. And I went into like high school and my adolescence, like I could have probably ran a household. You know what I mean? Like besides the bills and all that, like I knew the life skills you needed to get through. Like, honestly, like I feel like my son, the only thing he could do is like microwave popcorn and like put something in the microwave and make mac and cheese.
Put milk on cereal.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, but that's not his fault. That's my fault. I feel like as a parent, like he doesn't know how to do laundry. I'm going to have to teach him how to do laundry next week. Like, I feel like the way society has went where you have so many different distractions between your phone and all these extracurriculars. When we were growing up, you know, like we played board games and that was like once a day. The rest of the time you were doing stuff everybody else was doing. You were either out playing with your friends or you were working around the house with your parents or doing chores or taking care of things. So that built a whole different set of life skills. And I just feel like in general, not just me, not just you as parents, I feel like this generation
is underprepared
to do that. And you hope with the amount of money we're paying that these colleges are going to help them in the areas they need help. Now, I'm not going to say they're going to come in and cook them breakfast, but if they need guidance, that it's there for them.
The one thing sorry, go ahead.
I mean, me personally, I think I send my son off to college next weekend. Now, full disclosure, if everybody's listening, that Brian's daughter and my son aren't going far away from home. They're going far enough away from home to be far from home.
But they're close enough.
But they're close enough if the proverbial, you know what, hits the fan.
We can be there quickly.
We could be there quickly. And that was a huge factor to me. My son could have went like 5.5 hours away. And his mother and I had a long conversations about, is that the right thing to do for him in general, just for his life and for us? And I'm glad he chose a closer university. But I feel like for me, it's more of, did I prepare my son enough? And the answer is no. I didn't. I think he's mature enough. I think he'll make the right decisions. I worry a little bit about when he's around the party crowd and there's no I'll say repercussions, or there's nobody there to monitor it. 'Cause he's not a partier. He's not a drinker.
Will it become one, though?
I worry about that. I don't necessarily think so, but I also worry about the following.
Do you know about your journey?
Full disclosure, I've talked to him about that. We've had all sorts of different conversations about when we see people drinking or this and that, and just in general about the right decisions. But, you know, the mob mentality worries me. The follow along, don't worry about it, everybody's doing it mentality. You know, that's the kind of stuff that if you're not there can go south real quick. You know, I mean, let's be honest. One bad decision can change the world. I mean, you from the extreme of taking a drug that could kill you to just doing something stupid where you wind up in jail or whatever, you know, getting someone pregnant. There's a million different things that could go wrong that run through your head as a parent that you don't want to happen. And you just hope that the core values that you've given your kid are there in the back of their mind. You know, I always tell my son, if it doesn't feel right, don't do it. If there's any doubt in your mind that there's something could go south or sideways,
right,
you don't do it.
Well, to me, and again, without going into specifics, but you want your child to have the strength and security to make the hard decision. And that's where the worry comes in. So that's exactly what you're saying. And I think that's...
But we all had that, right, Brian? I mean, I when I went to college, I went like 4 hours away from home and... I never even visited the college. I had went to a bunch of different colleges, and then this state school in New York came up, and the fit was right in the area. And my father gave me a map and said, get off this exit. Packed up my truck, and I left. There was no orientation. There was none of this, you know, stuff. I mean, my wife's buying him air purifiers and rugs and vacuums and all this stuff. I mean, it's like, I mean, come on, man. Like,
I went weeks without talking to my parents.
Oh my God.
And I also I couldn't manage my life. Like for me, it was about, I didn't go to class for certain stretches. Like
me too.
I don't worry about my daughter missing class.
No,
and my parents were like, I had an intervention like at parents weekend where they're like, what are you doing? Like, what is wrong? I mean, the wheels came off. Like I couldn't manage my life and I was partying too much and I was skipping classes. My concerns about my daughter are totally different.
Right. But at the same time, you think same story. Like I went to school and I had to basically get a 3.0 my beginning of my sophomore year to stay. Like I was so bad my freshman year. Same thing, you know, drinking, partying, going, skipping class. You know, I don't need to go to that class. There's 400 people there and it's no big deal. And the next thing you know, guy was taking attendance. You know, it's like you just don't think of stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, no matter how much you think you prepare your kids, I always worry about, is that little part of me in them? You know what I mean? Because let's be honest, it's a huge investment, right? Huge investment that we're making in our children. Insane investment. And there's a lot of pressure on them to perform, regardless of, you know, I'm sure you've in talking have said how much this is going to cost you and your daughter has heard it. I mean, it's just a fact, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're not stupid. Kids are not dumb. Like, they know what the pressure is. Now, if someone's going to tell me, well, I'm spending X amount of money a year on this stuff, you better perform. And then what happens if you start slacking? You know, like, I would be kind of scared if I had that much pressure on me. And then you're taking that to an 18-year-old going away and all this other stuff. So it's a big deal. And I feel like we as parents have to understand that too.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like ultimately with the potential social emotional isolation of technology, you know, I tell a story. I don't know if I said this to you and I'll finish with this. A buddy of mine is a college coach. And he basically said that, you know, if you have a team, you have like, it's not a guarantee of happiness and success, but if you're on a team, you have a built-in social structure. If you're involved in something, a musical or something, you have a built-in social structure. It doesn't mean you're going to be happy. It doesn't mean you're going to make friends. It just means there's something built in. If you don't have those things, you can be with the way this world works now, you can be incredibly isolated. And it's not my fear specifically for my daughter, but my fear is, my expectations have changed. I just want her She wants to find a group of friends and be happy. And the truth is, like, I think she's going to be fine in the classroom. I just want her to find some friends and be happy.
Yeah.
Like, that's all I fucking care about.
Yeah.
That's it. And I feel weird saying it because it's $93,000 and all this other stuff. But, like, based on the way I see her, that's all I really want for her is to feel like she really belongs to something. And that's it. And maybe that's right or wrong or indifferent, but that's how I feel.
No, I don't think that's right or wrong. I don't think that's wrong at all. I mean, and the good thing is I feel like the way that these colleges have gone in the recently, I'll say the last 10 years, is there's a huge focus on extracurricular activities. There's a huge focus on a student engagement, which I don't feel like has been around at a lot of these colleges. Now, also, I feel like we're very fortunate that our kids are going to smaller universities where they're not going to a college where there's 25,000 kids.
Right. That's purposeful on our part.
Yeah, us too. But at the same time, I feel like that's a huge help because I don't think you'll fall through the cracks academically. Now, again, you're not so much concerned about that, but also smaller universities, still a lot of offerings. I mean, where my son's going, you can be in a spike ball club. I mean,
right. I just want my kid to try those clubs.
Right.
Like you have to take the effort, you have to take the step to do it.
Yep.
Like to me, that's the biggest thing, but it is not. There's all those opportunities, but you have to try them for to know if you like it or don't like it.
Exactly.
That's where my fear comes in.
So you hope that your daughter, and I hope that my son takes advantage of this opportunity, not just academically, but for all that these colleges have to offer, because these colleges aren't stupid. They're not going to retain people coming back if they're not giving you what you want. It's like you stay at a hotel. If the bed sucks, you're not going back.
Right. And the truth is but it's just so different. Even the depth of the emotion of our conversation, I think with my dad is like, don't get arrested. Don't get anyone pregnant. That was like your marching orders.
Right.
And that was it. And then I don't think my dad or my mom gave anything else a second thought. It's just, again, it's generational.
It is generational. And I feel like it will hit his mother, my wife, I think will be a little bit more emotional just because it's her baby, right? And she's the mama bear. Me right now, I'm like, get out of here. Like, I'm tired of picking up after you. I'm tired of all this stuff. But I know damn well within a couple of weeks, I'm going to be missing him. I just know I am.
Of course.
Because, you know, he's my firstborn and it's just how it is. And he's my son, you know?
And you guys connect on a lot of things. I mean, like, even just, you're going to sit on the couch and look to your right and he's not going to be there for watching a Yankee game.
Yeah.
That's going to be weird.
Yeah, and we've been doing that a lot lately. And it's funny because I've been cooking a lot of expensive dinners. I've been buying a lot of expensive meats and stuff lately. And I feel like that was subconsciously me being like, I want to send you out in a good note. And I want to send you out in style. But again, I am so happy that he's not super far away. And I'm super happy that he's going to still experience the college. And I do that in quotes for people that are listening because I still believe that if you're going to college, you got to live there. You got to experience it. You got to grow up on your own. You don't want to be coming home at night and having your mom cook you dinner and all that stuff.
Or hassle you for this, that, or the other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, don't fret, Brian. I feel like you're going to be fine.
I hope so. John, that was really good. I was like, really, you want to talk about this? And I'm like, I'm glad. I have to toe it a little bit because I don't want, if she will never listen to this, but if she ever did.
So you're going to cry tomorrow, Brian?
I will. I probably will. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I cry thinking about giving a speech at my kid's wedding that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, if you're not human if you don't cry, dude. I mean, it's a big
And we all
moment.
Cry in different ways. You don't have to be bawling or uncontrollable to be crying. Like,
no.
You know what I mean? I think that crying manifests itself in a lot of different ways. And yeah, I think that I will. Thank you, John. I appreciate it. You've been listening to Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports.